Good morning. My name is Michael Wenstrom. I work with Region 8 EPA, and I'm in the Environmental Justice Program. I also have the honor to be the coordinator for the EPA's CARE program in this region. CARE is Community Action for a Renewed Environment, and it is a program that is relatively new to EPA. It's about 5 years old, and it represents a rather dramatic shift in focus in terms of how we serve communities and how we bring their environmental and environmental health issues to the fore. How do we get to the next? So this is a community-based program, community-driven, and we're helping underserved communities. We have more than 60 projects out and around the country over the past 5 years. Most of them are in environmental justice communities, so they're working in underserved communities in ways that are relatively new for us, but they're very powerful, and we have taken a model that we have learned from communities to help us be more effective in what we do. Why is this different from the normal grant program? In a normal grant, we can give you a 501c3, a public health department, a community organization, a grant, and then we have to walk away and let you do that work. In this case, we have cooperative agreements, which under our rules allow us to become partners with the grantee so that we can bring our resources to bear to help make this project a more effective one. So we gather as many resources as are necessary for a particular project. We will have a project officer who will make sure that our water programs, our air programs, our toxicologists, our risk assessors are available to begin to share information on what's going on in the communities. So this process, this partnership process, and the fact we're giving the community the ownership lets them begin to understand that they are driving their own future in this regard. So the changes occur from within, and what I know from my work in environmental justice is if that doesn't happen, it doesn't last. It's not sustainable. And so our job is to come in and not do a 2-year quick fix and leave, but rather to go into that community and help to transform it and give it the sense that it can make changes that will last long after we leave the program. So who are the recipients? Community groups, as I had indicated, tribal organizations. We have projects in several tribal groups. Local public health and planning agencies. I think about a quarter of our projects at this point, the grants have gone to public health agencies and universities, and then combinations, because what we'll do is we'll put together partnerships. You know, for example, Margaret Barber will talk about her project in Pueblo. One of the key partners in this process is the local public health agency. So how does it work? We have a 2-year project. It's advertised every year in January or February or March. It's actually February, March. Typically the RFP will come out. We'll give people the appropriate time to respond, and then we will make the awards typically by June of each year. And in that process, we will have granted level one or level two grants. A level one grant is designed to help a community understand the nature of its problems, and I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along. Level two is designed to help the community address the issues that have been identified so that you can take what you learned in a level one or take what you've learned in other circumstances and find ways to get those problems solved over the course of the 2 years. And this is kind of cute. I mean, this gives you sort of the four basics of the CARE process. We're joining together. We're creating partnerships. You know, as Chris indicated, you know, she's got a powerful set of partners which make this all possible. We can't do this alone. This is not a one-agency process. It's a partnership-building process. You identify the problems, and you look for solutions. You implement those solutions, and then you become self-sustaining. It's not rocket science. It's just basic community work that creates an environment whereby the environmental and environmental health benefits just flow out of the process sort of naturally. We have more than 60 projects. Is it close to 70 now? Across the country, and this map shows you where they are. And We geographically, they spread everywhere, and in terms of subject matter, they deal with everything you can imagine, from looking at radon, which Margaret Barber will talk about next year, to looking at diesel emissions and looking at auto body shop VOC emissions. I mean, it's drinking water issues. It's everything you can imagine that affects health and public health. This project started in 2005 after some significant planning. And what we were trying to do is respond to what people have identified. EPA tends to get rather rigid in its structure. And in that process, the air group may do one thing and the water group may do another thing. What we came to understand is we have to bring all of our stovepipes, you know, into one unified whole in looking at these problems, because communities are not just air, communities are not just water. They are the problems that flow out of that, and they cross all of the media for the most part. So what we've done is created the ability for every part of our agency to contribute to this process, both financially and in terms of technical resources. So what are the benefits? We address multimedia toxics. We are strengthening partnerships and creating them where they never existed before. When I say we, that means the community is doing this with our assistance. Understand that community is the heart of all of this. Working with local agencies, public health agencies, environmental agencies, those problems don't get truly solved unless those are all engaged in this process. We will bring whatever resources we need to bring to bear on the issues. They are anything you can imagine that EPA does. You can tap those issues and those resources, you know, through the project officers for each of these 60 or more projects. And we'll take a toxicologist down to a place to meet with people. We'll bring water experts. We'll bring people in from the states where we can to help them identify where the problems exist. So it's a really kind of Catholic approach, small c Catholic approach, in terms of bringing everybody to the table that can be of assistance in this process. And we're testing out new ideas. We're developing new approaches and new models as we go. So over the past 5 years, we've put about $12 million into the program. Each year we advertise it, and there will be a pot of money this year as well. And we will award a number of grants, my guess is 10 or more probably, to the applicants. Who are our partners? EPA, CDC, ATSDR. We work with DOT, we work with HUD, we work with the Healthy Homes Program. So the ABA is providing us pro bono legal support. We've been able to tap a number of our sister federal agencies to really be active partners in this process. And we've leveraged an enormous amount of resources. We've got $12 million from local and national sources. In-kind, $2 million. And if you in-kind, think of churches, you know, coming to the table and doing cleanups in communities because they've been a partner in this process. So we have over 1,700 partners nationally across this whole program. That's a remarkable number, and it's a testimony to the validity of the model and the power of the process that creates the changes. And so we created a roadmap. I mean, the graphic is cute, and I'll talk a little bit about the steps, but the point is you give people a starting place, and you help them to conceptually think through the process as they go. So as these 10 steps start to roll out, you begin to see how the community begins to buy into and engage in this process in such a way as to really start to see the opportunity for change. And I call it a 10-step program in deference to the 12-step program. But it's building the partnerships. And these are going to be 1, 2, 3, 4. This is going to be a sequential number. Understand, it doesn't always happen this way. The communities do this in ways that are good for them. And for example, if you're a tribal community, you're going to do this very different than if you are a non-tribal community. But you build partnerships. You identify your concerns. You identify vulnerabilities. You find the assets within the community that you can look to support the effort that you're undertaking. You identify the concerns for immediate action. So what we call that is the ability to really, it's called a bias for action, the ability to take the issues that are right in front of you, and even though you're in a longer-term process to get to sort of this collective idea of what's going on in your community, you start to solve problems. I mean, and again, Margaret will talk a little bit about that in one of her points. And then you collect and organize information and rank risks and identify potential solutions. Those first eight steps are really the level one grant. The last two steps are when you, and level nine could probably be a level one or level two, but then you become self-sustaining. You take the results and you make it happen. You do something. You make a change in your community. You roll out projects. I mean, we typically do a check signing event, which is, you know, it's a little bit cheesy because we have this whiteboard that you write a community's name on, a big check. But what it does is it gets the press there, it gets people engaged, it gets your local politicians all excited because they get their picture in the paper or they get on TV, and that's fine. Our job is to make sure that people understand that there's something significant and important going on here. Now, the steps that I just talked about are natural to a community if they're really trying to make a difference. So while we as EPA are going to give somebody some money to do these things, you know, I've talked to people here at this conference who do this without the money. I mean, I know that's kind of that's a little bit of a heresy, but they are community-based organizations that intrinsically and fundamentally know this is how you make a change. You make a change by making the community a part of the solution, not imposing a solution on them from the outside. And so here are the resources. We have a website that you can see here. It's just www.epa.gov/care. I put the PACE-EH website up there so that you can look at that model, because in terms of ranking risks and trying to identify problems, that's a very powerful tool that a number of our public health partners in this process have used PACE-EH to identify their information. And if you want to look at what the CARE projects in your area have been, you go to the website and look at communities by region, and that'll tell you what's nearby you. And our website gives you a summary of all of the communities that we've worked with, what their projects are, and if you need to get in touch with any of those people just to sort of understand the dynamic of the process, that's available to you as well. We have a booth upstairs. Marva King, who is one of the project managers for the National CARE Program, will be there. Yeah, stand up, Marv. Yeah, that's right. And Marva has been an inspiration to us all, and I don't know how she gets everything done she does. But so that's it, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them at this time. Yes?
Is there assistance available?
You raise a very interesting question. From an environmental justice perspective, I concern myself with that a lot, and that's a real challenge for us because grant writing is a very technical and peculiar skill. We're trying to find ways to encourage people to connect with those people who know how to do that, so that in a community group you may not have somebody who is technically that adept. But if you can start to build a partnership with a university or a group that does grant writing, and maybe Margaret has some thoughts too.
Just that nationally, we've been talking about this and the headquarters and the need for this. In the past, we've relied on individual regions, we've got a lot of workshops on it.
Right.
But nationally, and they have been doing it in some of the regions, but nationally, we've been talking about the national approach to this. And but now we're talking about doing an online tutorial for people.
Right. Yeah.
And we're also talking about encouraging whenever someone's going out in a region to do any type of workshop, that they have a type of grant workshop. It's going to
right.
Learn more about our grant,
yep.
And how to apply for our grant.
And
I believe next week at the NHEC meeting, National Environmental Justice Advisory Council meeting in Kansas City, they tack on a grants workshop, and there'll be some of that there. So we're starting to do it.
Yep.
And
I'm involved in a work group that is developing a grant writing module for CARE. So when that is completed, we will have a training available for community groups to see how they might more effectively write a grant and compete in this process. Yes, Michael.
I was wondering if there's any particular data sets that tie to care initiatives and that show impact. Are there any data sets that you particularly tie into?
For example, I mean, I want to make sure I'm responsive here.
Data sets like survey instruments or
Okay, I understand. First of all, survey is a bad word in EPA. We can't do surveys. But what we do is we have a number of national databases. We have air databases, water databases, and all of those are available. And when you go through this risk ranking process, we make all of that data available to the community and then try to provide them with the technical support to understand what that means. Understand that a community may look at itself and say, here is our problem. That problem is cancer, and it's caused by the steel mill next door. That may or may not be right. I mean, so what we're trying to do is truth test some of the suppositions in the community, bring the data to their attention so that they can make informed decisions about what they want to do in terms of changing their circumstances.
And so what Michael alluded to this in his presentation, but when every care community is granted, they get grant money, the region builds a team around. So whatever that community needs, the region reach out to from the region to get that information. That region may need someone who understands risk, or they may need someone
right.
who understands water quality. So that provides an incentive.
Right. I can take one more question. Yes, sir. Step one, right? Yeah.
But you're very successful in coordinating with local
yeah.
universities, usually very cooperative with
right.
community.
Yeah, that's a great model. That is. Well, I'll take one last question. I'm sorry. We should have a conversation after this is over because in the environmental justice world, that's what we do. I mean, we work with communities outside of the grant. Most of my work is outside of the grants world. And my fundamental obligation is to work to see that capacity can begun to be built without the funds that you have.
But I think she's talking about it on a national level. I think she's talking about it on a national level. It's not so, because every region is different. And you're great, Michael.
Well, no, I'm not. No. No.
But
well, and that's institutionally, we have some changes to make in terms of how we deal with that issue. But we're in the middle of that process. I mean, Lisa Jackson's commitment to environmental justice is not rhetorical, it's real. So every program is working to try to find ways to do exactly what you've asked. Thank you very much.